Time now for your comments. It is interesting, writes Adam Taylor of Portland, Oregon, that someone can complain about being expected to do the job they are paid to do. He's referring to our story about a Capitol Hill debate on whether pharmacists can refuse to give out birth control pills or other medications they object to on moral grounds. Adam Taylor writes, as a vegetarian and a sandwich maker, if I told my customers that I was morally obliged to not sell them the beef that's written on the menu, I would quickly be out of a job. If someone feels so morally violated by the terms of their job, they should probably find a different line of work. A lot of you wrote in about our story on the John Templeton Foundation, which tries to create a dialogue between religion and science. Rick Kennerly of Virginia Beach joined the conversation. Personally, he writes, the wonder of science and religion is that no matter which way one looks, either inward toward the atom or outward toward the cosmos, there's always another mystery to uncover, another piece of the puzzle to place. I see that as the truest indicator of a superior being. Carolyn McManus of Seattle writes that she was reminded of a story told by her physics teacher, which goes this way. Suppose a book falls on the planet Mars. The Martians take out their measuring devices and measure the marks. They identify the size and number of marks and their patterns. They're very pleased with themselves, thinking they now understand the book. The point, our listener writes, as scientists, we have to hold out the possibility that we are doing the same thing. And while we're on Mars, a correction. I read a short item warning that microbes could stow away on a manned mission to Mars and contaminate the planet. That was based on a report by the National Research Council, but the scientists weren't talking about a manned mission to the Red Planet, only a robotic one. And another correction, in a story about current research on meditation, we identified French-born monk Matthieu Ricard as a Zen monk. He is, in fact, a Tibetan Buddhist monk, a distinction that matters to listeners like Richard Jaffe, who is a professor of Buddhist studies at Duke. We guessed many pet owners would write after hearing our story about how cats don't have the capacity to taste sweet things. And sure enough, based on your flood of emails, we now know of a cat in Auburn, California, that eats strawberries, one in San Antonio that has a hankering for candy canes, and many felines nationwide who crave grapes, plums, and one very popular item, cantaloupes. For an explanation, we went back to one of our experts, Joseph Brand of the Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia.
Well, I don't doubt that some cats like melons and strawberries. I once had a cat who ate peas and corn. Cats may have receptors on their tongues for things we can't even taste, but one thing I can say is the cat can't taste sweetness the same way you and I do.
And if the cat hasn't got your tongue, feel free to shout out about the stories you hear on Morning Edition via email. Just go to npr.org and click on the Contact Us button. And please, tell us where you live and how to pronounce your name.